UFO.
Having a bad day? Well, not anymore. Your days don't have to be that long, gloomy, and boring.
Boring. Having a bad day?
Because you've got a honey bunny that'll make
your days don't have to be gloomy and boring. Because you've got the honey bunny to make it sunny for you. Join SWAT for Vocal Majesty every weekday from noon to 3 to have the most contemporary conversation on radio. On 95.1 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Vintage tea, brand new phone, high heels on, cobblestones. When you are young, they assume you know nothing. Sequin smile, black lipstick, sensual politics. When you are young, they assume you know nothing.
Much for staying with us. It's 104 and introducing to you the show known as the Public Square Special. And the show today, or like we started on our station 95.1 Nigeria Info since on Saturday, focuses on state of adolescent youth and development, and is a second of the six-part special series on maternal, child, and adolescent health, which would also feature Nigerian partners of the Global Partnership for Maternal and Health and Child Health. There will be other special editions from, you know, every other 1 p.m. like this to 2 p.m. Tuesday to Friday of this week. On today's edition, Rotimi Sankore, who is a development expert and journalist, will summarize the big picture and some key data, followed by a question and answer with Mrs. Opeyemi Piton, who is a co-convener of Nigerian Youth Champions of Universal Health. Good morning to you, Mr. Rotimi. Good to have you join us.
Yes, well, thank you so much.
All right. So you are supposed to give us some data, you know, some key data based on that which we'll be focused on today. So you want to start with that?
Yes. First, some overview and then the data, just to provide some context on why this topic, this theme on adolescent development and health is really crucial, because I know that often a lot of people think, well, you know, they are children, we don't really need to think about it, we need to deal more with the adult situations. But it is precisely because we did not deal with and improve the lives of adolescents in terms of their health and development in the past is why we are in this problem that we are now. Just a quick overview of the age range we are talking of so that the listeners are on the same page with us. So, broadly speaking, your adolescence sort of kicks in between the age of 10 and 13 for most children, until about 18, so the teenage years, more or less. And in Nigeria, I mean, this is a really significant percentage of the population. For the 10 to 14 age range, females are about 11.7 million, and males are about 12.1 million. So that means that for females, it's roughly 12.4% of the population, males roughly 12.5%. And if you look at the older adolescents, 15 to 18, for females, this is about 9 million, just over 9 million, and for males, about 10 million. So you can see that this is not an insignificant percentage of the population to deal with. So governments at the federal, state, and local level have to have a very clear and deliberate policy for adolescents. It has to be clear. It has to be deliberate. Obviously, the youth ministry has a key role to play, and we hope that there's an understanding that they need to work in a cluster with the education, health, and gender ministries. Now, the youth minister is someone I know. You know, I mean, we worked in the same media establishment in the early 90s, in the era of military dictatorship. And, you know, I mean, his intellectual range, as far as I understand from when I knew him, should be good enough for this job. But, you know, sadly, one, the gaps in coordination with the education, health, and gender ministries, and the wrong understanding in Nigeria that youth are people who are in their 30s and 40s. You know, means that the focus is a bit off. So the policy and investment needs to start at the adolescent level so that we can get things right. I mean, in many ways, when the Minister of Education tells us today, and I'm moving on to the data part now, mm-hmm. when the Minister of Education tells us today that we have 60 million adults unable to read and write, this reflects a failure to invest in the adolescents of yesteryears. And this has a horrendous impact on our society and economy. It has a horrendous impact on economic growth, on social cohesion, social inclusion, economic inclusion or exclusion. It even has an impact on insecurity, because a significant percentage of the bandits or extremists are unable to read and write, hence easily recruited. So, I mean, that gives us an idea that when we say today 60 million adults unable to read or write, these were the adolescents and youth of yesterday that didn't have an opportunity for education and job skills. The same thing when we say 33% unemployment, 22% underemployed, combined 55%. It's also poor investment in youth education youth skills, and so forth. You know, the gender aspect of it is also really crucial, because when you look at a country like Nigeria with 43% first child marriage across the country, you see clearly that there is a poor understanding by the youth ministry, especially that, you know, the adolescent girls need to be defended, that their human rights, their right to bodily autonomy and integrity, their right to education, their right to reproductive health, that all these things need to be led by the youth ministry. The youth ministry is not about sports only, as you can see from the news over the last 3 months. And the youth ministry has to work with the gender and women affairs, with education and health, to ensure that girl children, girl adolescents are well protected. Again, let us underline that this is not just federal work. It is federal, state, and local governments. I mean, it is so sad. If you just look around the country, the 774 local governments, there is no publicly funded youth development center in any of them that we know that this is supported by the local government, where the youth can go for training, for skills, for information on their reproductive health. There is a library. They can, yes, do sports and things like that. So you can see from the top to bottom where the incredible gaps are. And, I mean, just to round up on the data, you know, the fact that we have 13 million children out of school is also a sad reflection on the investment of the adolescents of today. Because the 60 million adults unable to read or write, that's the failure to invest in adolescents of yesteryears. Today, we have 13 million out of school. The Minister of Education says it's 10 million. Yeah, I mean, what's the difference there? And by the way, he said the 3 million reduction came during the year of COVID when schools were closed. So I take his claim with a pinch of salt. Up to 70% of children that start primary school are unable to transit to secondary school. That's also a big failure, huge policy failure in adolescent health and development. And again, when you come back to reproductive and sexual health, the data on first child marriage is a proxy, is a clear proxy for reproductive and sexual health, because these millions of girls that have been forced into child marriage, essentially, sexual violence has been inflicted on them. And the Nigerian state has more or less accepted it as normal that a 12, 13, 14-year-old girl can be seized from her parents' care, sometimes with their acceptance, and subjected to sexual violence, possible impregnation, and this lasts for life, because once they are captured as adolescents, you know, these cruel men essentially shatter their aspirations and subject them to a life of captivity and poverty. So we need to take all these things together and understand that the present situation we are in is largely influenced by the past. And if we are looking at today's data, the future is unlikely to be better unless there is a change from this week by the federal, states, and local government. So that's a bit of a summary, overview, and the data on adolescent health and development.
That's quite interesting, sir. I mean, you've projected almost, you know, everything that there is to this. If you're listening to us, this is the Public Square Special, and today's edition is focused on state of adolescent health and development. And Mr. Rotimi has just given us, you know, some overview and summary of the data, you know, the importance of adolescent the adolescent youth and development. Now, having listened to you, sir, I would like to say or like to ask, what does the data tell us about the state of, you know, adolescent youth and development in Nigeria? I know you've highlighted a bit on that, but you may just want to emphasize a little bit more before we take on Mrs. Piton, who is waiting on the line.
Yes. So let's just do a little bit of projection and look, for instance, at a country like Afghanistan and look at the state of insecurity there. It's also because under the previous Taliban rule, there was a failure to invest in youth development and health. So for the decade leading up to 2001, for instance, Afghanistan had more or less the highest total fertility in the world, the highest birth rates, or the highest number of children per girl or woman. And the failure to invest in education and youth skills and development for both the boys and girls then essentially gifted the Taliban with an army, more or less. And it is those, you know, kids born in that decade before 2001 that essentially have formed the Taliban army that they used to overrun Afghanistan. So, and if you look at, say, Northwest, Northeast especially, the birth rate now, the total fertility, is similar to what it was in that decade before 2001 in Afghanistan. Roughly 7 children per woman. Roughly 7 children per woman, times polygamy in some states like Katsina and Zamfara, hence 28 to 32 children per man. And it has a lot of implications in terms of budgeting for education, budgeting for job skills, hunger and malnutrition and things like that. So it's really important to complete the circle of this data, link it so that everyone understands that failure to invest in reproductive and sexual health for girls, failure to ensure that all girls have 12, minimum 12 years of education, 6 years primary, 6 years secondary, failure to invest in education, youth skills for the boys as well, and so forth like that, has a cumulative impact, like I said earlier, on everything from your unemployment, underemployment. But now that data is pointing clearly to show us that it also has an implication on insecurity. And this is not just a question of Afghanistan. If you look at all the most unstable countries around the world, or even in Africa, Somalia, Democratic Republic of Congo, Central African Republic, if you want to go further, Yemen, these are the same characteristics. Failure to invest in youth education, failure to invest in youth skills, failure to invest in adolescent reproductive and sexual health, and so forth. So, just to summarize again, the ministries of youth at federal and state levels need to work together. I don't know if many people understand that at local government level, there should be a counselor in charge of youth. Many people overlook that. So when last did a minister of youth, I'm not even talking of Sunday Dare now, who I said I worked with in the same media establishment in the early 90s, even going to set him aside. When last did a minister of youth convey the commissioners of youth nationally to say, this is our adolescent health and development policy and plan, and cluster their budgets together? When last did that youth sector then meet with the health, gender and education sector to say, this is what we need from you to ensure that going forward there is universal education for everybody? Instead, what you see is that in many states, the universal basic education funds are not even accessed by the states to, you know, to match the federal government funding. So that broad gap in all those areas, youth and adolescent development, education, health, gender, is where we have landed. I mean, we can have, I mean, a 10-hour program on this, breaking the data down state by state. But I think this can just summarize it by way of introduction, so that you can go on to your question and answer with Mrs. Oyeyemi Piton.
Indeed. Mrs. Oyeyemi Piton, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. I'm sure you've been listening to Mr. Rotimi. He has given us a very beautiful overview, summary of both the data and the implication of adolescent youth and development in Nigeria. Now, let me just begin with this question for you, that you help us also give us an insight. What do you think, you know, by the way, Mrs. Oyeyemi Piton is a co-convener of Nigerian Youth Champions on Universal Healthcare. Now, what should be done by way of government policy and investment to improve adolescent health and development in Nigeria?
Okay, very simple. And I like what Mr. Rotimi said. Riding on the information he gave, I would like to call on the government and definitely all the stakeholders to see health, particularly adolescent health, as an investment rather than an expenditure. You know, this will give a change of attitude, and then we would know that the implication of investing in adolescent health on not only our economy, but even on our security. I love the topic of today. We're talking about adolescent health and development. So it's an holistic kind of discussion and intervention for adolescents. And so back to the question, mine would be that adolescent health should be seen as an investment. Funding for adolescent health should not be modeled up with other budget lines in terms of, for example, in terms of reproductive health of adolescent health. You will see that it's being modeled up with women. And so the age bracket is 15 to 49. And so you are unable to readily pick out interventions for adolescents. So funding should not be modeled up in budgeting. Funding that goes into adolescent health should be clearly stated. Aside that, adolescent health should be prioritized. What do I mean by that? You can't plan without data. So at the grassroots, at the smallest level, primary health care centers, the NHIS tool that has been used, the M&E tool, the monitoring and evaluation tool being used, you would see that it does not really capture this age bracket specifically. It's been modeled up with other age group. And at the end of the day, you don't know what the issues are specifically for adolescents. And then it cannot aid planning. And so we need to get this right from the tools being used even to collect data at the primary health care centers. Then you plan. When we plan for adolescents, knowing fully well that adolescents need have varying health needs, you know, from sexual and reproductive health to their mental health, they are also faced with non-communicable diseases. And so what are we going to do in ensuring that this age group is being planned for and they are not modeled up? And then governments also need to know that this age group is actually a very critical one, because it's a passage from childhood to adulthood. And so it gives us an opportunity. Hello, should I go on? Or
yes,
you
please. No, yes, go ahead.
Okay, so it gives us an opportunity to actually consolidate on past investments in health that has been done in adolescence, in childhood, and then also to prepare them for adulthood. So once the investment in adolescence is taken seriously, it will definitely curb more expenditure that should have been expended in the future in their adulthood, because you have actually invested strategically in their adolescence. And so I'm calling on governments and definitely all stakeholders to ensure that there's appropriate planning for adolescent health. And this can be informed by carefully curated data at all levels, as well as funding, which should not be modeled up. You know, it should be clearly stated adolescent health should be prioritized, even at the Basic Health Care Provision Fund. You will see that it is pregnant women and then children below 5 that are being prioritized. And so the ones for adolescents, can they clearly state that this is what it is for adolescents and young people? And definitely, youth-friendly services and facilities should be made available by government. It was struck you that was just recently, I think in April, Hello, can you hear me?
Okay, you're back on now. You're back on now. Go ahead.
Okay, you lost me for a minute. Okay.
For a minute there.
So I said, okay, so I said recent. Our part of a scorecard on development on adolescent health. And we were trying to get indicators. And it will shock you that just at the first quarter of 2021, 47,000 young people, that's adolescents, were pregnant, and then they actually visited, and they took their first antenatal. What this showed us readily was the fact that 47,000 means that it's just primary care centers being captured, not even the secondary and tertiary centers, and not even those ones that did not even go to the hospitals at all. Now, if this could have been prevented, if there were preventive measures in terms of creating awareness for young people, making youth-friendly services available for young people. And so, beyond the fact that they were pregnant, and then that some would have probably aborted, and that's unsafe abortion, you know, they should have been captured in taking modern contraceptives, for example. So, these are the issues. If we don't plan, we are definitely planning to fail. Because I would just like to even round up this particular question with the song of Asha, which says, one day the river will overflow and there will be nowhere for us to go. You know, we will not know which way we have put out the fire. So really, adolescent health and development is very critical and very important. We know what is happening already in terms of security in the nation right now. A whole lot of adolescent people are out of school. Now, we cannot say that it is none of our business because we are in this together. You know, if we look the other way, it will definitely boomerang. So we need to take it seriously, starting from getting the data right, planning for them, making funds available and clearly stated so that it can be monitored and you know, we can ask for accountability. And then knowing fully well that adolescents need beyond sexual and reproductive health, they need their mental health is also very important. They are also, vulnerable to malaria and other diseases. So they should be captured in all of the things that are being made available for pregnant women and even children under 5.
Indeed. All right. Secondly, you've talked on the, you know, looking at it from the angle of what government can do to ensure, you know, that the adolescent health and development can be actually develop and, you know, harness and all of that. So now, what can citizens do to improve adolescent health and development?
Okay, so I definitely love this question because citizen participation in Nigeria is very poor, very poor. And so we just sit down, fold our hands, and then say, that's what they've just provided, and then we don't ask questions. As a citizen of Nigeria, you also have your duties. As you have your rights, you also have duties. And your duty is actually to know. You have a right to know. You have a right. You have the duty to know and to ask questions. And so I'm calling on every citizen of this nation, you know, to have information, because the information are out there. And of course, because of, we can't place all the citizens on the same level. Some are not aware, not because they don't want to know, but maybe because of their situation. And that's where civil society organizations come in, to sensitize the populace. And for those citizens who know, to tell other people. Now, you have the right to know what is the budget. What is the budget that has gone out for health in terms of adolescents? Because that's the focus of discussion. What funding has been made available in terms of basic health care provision? Is your primary health care, like these are even technical terms I'm using, but using the layman terms, the primary health care center close to you, is it functional? Has money been sent out or made available for it to be functional? Why is this money? These are the kind of questions. Do you have a counselor? Do you have... So, these are, if you have a counselor, are you asking your counselor questions? Critical questions. Why is this family health care center... why does it have only one nurse attending to numerous people? Why can't I have access to drugs when I need them in my family health care? So, as citizens, there are basic questions. These are not rocket science. You go to your family health care center, it's not functional. Ask questions. Civil society organizations working at the grassroots, working in the, at the subnational level, the state levels. How are you empowering your the community members to know, to have information of the funding that has been released and what it's supposed to be for, so that they can monitor what is their rights, what are the healthcare services available to them that they can enjoy, so that when they are not enjoying it, they can ask questions.
Mm.
And so citizens have the right to ask questions. And the truth of the matter is this: once we start asking questions, duty bearers will sit tight. Mm. They will definitely do the right thing.
Mm. I think the average citizen in Nigeria does not realize how much power he or she has, and that's why whatever we have, you know, we just take it hook, line, and sinker. But like you rightly said, if people begin to ask questions, then those who are in charge and those who are saddled with the responsibility will sit tight and ensure that they do, because the citizens know his or her rights. Now, lastly, what is civil society doing? Because, I mean, these are tripartite, you know, sides of the coin. We talk about government, we talk about the citizens. Now, the civil society that also helps to, you know, shape in things in society and also lend their voices to some of these causes. What is the civil society doing to improve adolescent health and development?
Well, civil society organizations have been doing a whole lot, and I must really commend, you know, this organization. And definitely, there's still more to do, but we've been doing a whole lot. And now, so I would like to say that civil society organizations have actually put governments on their toes, one. Then two, we've also supported them. Okay, for example, at the national level, I know that there's this technical working group on adolescent health, and it's constituted of civil society organizations, development partners, and then even the federal government officials themselves, the Gashi department, to be specific. You know, the Gashi department is the Gender, Adolescent, School Health and Elderly Care Division of the Family Health Department. And so they came together and they updated the national policy on health and development of adolescents and young people in Nigeria. So at the national level now, because what policy does is to create an enabling environment for implementation of whatever it is to be done appropriately. And so there's a national policy now on health and development of adolescents and young people in Nigeria. It's been updated, and in its updates, all of those things that have been taken care of in this policy. But this is at national level. Change is really done at the grassroots, at the state level. And so beyond this national policy, the civil society in states should definitely ensure that they also, just like it was done at the national level, they should also work with the state's federal ministry of health, for example, and ensure that this policy is being implemented. You know, they should also come together and come up with their own implementation framework on how they want to implement the national policy, and then implement at state level, because that is where change will really be made. Then beyond that, national civil society organizations should sensitize citizens. Now, because we can speak all the grammar, because we know the information, we know all of that. But the truth is that citizens will make change happen because they are always there. We cannot be everywhere at the same time. But when we empower them with the right information, with the right information in terms of what the government has already made available, because there are so many things, there are so many... So, for example, the basic health care provision, for example, it's there, and the states are already, utilizing the money already. So who's going to monitor that? The citizens, of course, because number one, they should know what it even provides. You know, what's the provision of this basic healthcare fund? How are they supposed to enjoy it in real terms? I'm pregnant. If I go there, I'll receive service. I have children under five. If they go there, they would receive immunization free. Everything clearly stated. They have that information. They go to the primary health care centers. They ask for this service that they know that they have rights to, and then they are not able to enjoy it. They escalate. It's as simple as that. So we need to sensitize. So civil society, we are just like the middleman.
Mm.
We work with the government because we understand what is happening at the grassroots, at the community level. We escalate it to the government so that they can do something about it. And then we support the government in making policy available, in implementing, and then apart from the implementation side, we monitor their implementation. And so they know that we are not necessarily like a watchdog, but we are there to support them, but to put them on track when they are deviating. Mm-hmm. And so we understand, okay, money has been budgeted. How are this money released on time? Because that's another issue. Most of the time, money is being budgeted but not released on time, and then it's released, and then the model, they just you know mismanage the funds because it wasn't released at the time it was needed. And so money is released on time, accurately and appropriately, and then it's being used efficiently for the purpose in which it was disbursed in the first place. And then citizens should be empowered to know their rights, to know what they have, to know what they are also supposed to contribute. For example, the state health insurance scheme, I'm sure most states are already running that. But do the citizens know about this? The importance of registering or being part of the insurance scheme. So we need to empower the citizens to know what to ask and for them to ask the right questions.
Mm.
And that's the role of the civil society organization.
All right. Very interesting conversation we're having this afternoon on the Sunny Side. If you're just joining us, this is the Public Square Special. And today our focus is on state of adolescent health and development. It is a second of a six-part series, special series on maternal, child, and adolescent health, which also feature Nigeria partners of Global Partnership for Maternal Health and Child Care. Today we are talking, we've listened to Mrs. Rotimi, who gave us some very detailed statistics and a general overview summary of data on adolescent youth and development, importance of adolescent youth and development. And we've also listened to Mrs. Oyemi talk to us very beautifully as to what government, the citizen, and civil society can do to improve adolescent health and development. Well, it's time for you, the listener, who has been following, I'm sure, with rapt and keen attention, to call in and ask your question. I still have both my guests steady on the line. We'd love to know what your take is on this discussion. Do you have anything to ask? Do you have any concerns you want to raise? Do you have any contribution you also want to bring into the overall discussion? This is a time for you to call in on 0700-951-0000. Let me call the number again, 0700-951-0000. And you can send your messages to 0809-999. That's 9 in 3 places, 30137. Those are the numbers to call in and make your contribution today to the discussion on state of adolescent health and development. Okay, I'll be taking the calls. Let me take this one now. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Compliment and well done on your duty.
Thank you so much.
Is my name.
What?
Engineer Sam is my name.
All right, Engineer Sam. Let's talk.
Please, I appreciate all your effort in presenting this matter the way it should be, concerning the budgeting and the implementation, as well as planning and execution, as it concerns education, adult health rather.
Yeah, adolescents, yeah.
And the rest of them. My suggestion is that I would suggest that if there's a way this thing can be articulated in writing as a report and presented to the appropriate authorities, so that they will be able, because expecting them to be listening and jotting it down in the present circumstances we find ourselves in Nigeria, to me, I think it might be very difficult.
Mm.
And it is well detailed that if we can articulate them in writing and delivered from the local level to the federal level, so that it will form part of their planning and information for their planning.
All right. Thank you so much, Engineer. I'm sure Mrs. Oyemi is going to respond to that in a very short while. Let's take another caller. Hello? Hello? Hello, are you there? Okay, unfortunately, though, we lost that call. So you can call back once again, 0700-951-0000. Indeed, the state of adolescent health and development is of very, very great importance. And that's why we're focused on it today on the Public Square Special. So if you have your own contributions to make, we would really, really love to hear from you because this is a matter of utmost importance. But Mrs. Oyemi, do you want to just respond, before we take on other callers too? You heard the man's concerns.
Yes, I think he was suggesting that this should be probably circulated to appropriate authorities at the national, state, and I agree with him. I definitely agree with him. But definitely CSOs have been taking policy advocacy to policymakers and even the executive.
Can you just pause a little, please? Let's just take on this caller, then maybe you continue from there. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, my name is Dino. I'm calling you from Helsinki.
Okay. I can't hear you well. You're not so audible. I don't know if you're driving. Can you just wind up so we can have a compact voice or, output?
I don't hear you very well.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Let's see if we can take the call, though. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Listening to what you guys are saying, very interesting. And I'm like, why are these guys not in the... Why is this, the man this took? Why is he not the minister? And the woman, why is he not lawyer in the government?
Sir, I'm afraid you may have to call us back. Your line is really not clear. Mrs. Oyemi, can you hear him?
Not at all.
Okay, I don't know what
to say again.
I can't hear you very well.
Okay, so just kindly call us back because that output was really very poor. So we can at least catch what you're saying, and if it needs some sort of response, you get that. But in a case where you're just speaking and we're not hearing, then it wouldn't amount to much. Yeah, sorry about that, though. 0700-951-0000. So, Mrs. Oyemi, please can you go on? Sorry, I had to stop you there. Go on.
No problem. Mm-hmm. No problem. So I was just saying that his suggestions are valid. This information should be taken to those who can actually make change happen.
Mm.
And those are the duty bearers in terms of the executives, the legislators, and all of that. And so definitely civil society organizations have been taking advocacy to this at this different level to policymakers and then the implementers. More still needs to be done. If this can be packaged in a way where they will listen and they will hear, then that would definitely be. But definitely, CSOs will still continue to pay advocacy to the executives and then the legislators at different levels. That's the national level, the state level, even at the local government.
Mm.
So that will continue to be done.
Okay.
But citizens are also more empowered. They should also know that citizens are more empowered. Okay.
Someone is on the right line. Sorry. Madam. All right. Go ahead, Alcala. What's your name, please?
My name is Gerald. I'm calling from Abuja.
All right, Gerald. Thank you for joining us, and let's talk.
Okay, so on this issue, well, the guest has spoken well. I know that, access to health, focus on issues around sexual and reproductive health for adolescents. One of the key issues there, in as much as she has talked about the institutional challenges, there's also the issue where you're bringing it down to look at the issue of access. So, within some of these healthcare facilities, whether it's at the primary or secondary level, and even at the tertiary level, one of the key challenges that has limited or that has kind of contributed towards poor reproductive health outcomes for adolescents, especially girls, is the issue of access. So you find out that in most of these facilities, we don't have dedicated centers that kind of look at the issues around, you know, sexual and reproductive health for adolescent girls. So you find a situation where the same facilities or location where the adults go to in terms of assessing sexual and reproductive health services are the same locations where these same adolescents are expected to access the same services. And you know that there are issues around privacy, you know, given that these adolescents are less than 18 years of age. So I don't know, what is she doing towards, you know, in as much as all of us are aware of the institutional challenges and that there's no policy lacking in this respect, what are they doing towards ensuring that issues, both at the primary and secondary healthcare level, issues around access, you know, that kind of caters the need for privacy of these adolescents so that they can access, even if they don't complain to their parents about, you know, these issues, but if they go to the hospital, they are sure that, you know, their issues can be attended to and listened to with the utmost privacy and standards that are expected. So that's the question I wanted to ask.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Thank you so much, Gerald. I'm sure that will be responded to. All right. You want to go ahead, Mrs. Piton? You also heard him talk about the issue of access, which is a major concern for him there.
Okay, so I didn't hear him so clearly. He was faint. I don't know if you can just...
He was just looking at the issue of access. As much as, you know, we've talked about all of the things, but his focus, I think the major question is, you know, how do people get access or gain access to, you know, some of this health care for the adolescent, which is quite very important. He's just concerned that, you know, in all of these things, as much we're talking about it, do people have access to this health care that is needed by this group of people that we're talking about, the adolescents?
Exactly. So, yeah, and that's a very valid concern. The issue of access is definitely one of those things, and that's why we are also asking for youth-friendly healthcare services and even facilities. Because, of course, we remember that adolescents is between the age of 10 to 19, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how are they able to probably go to facilities and ask for whatever else they need that they have confidently, you know? Mm. And so I'm a young person, I'm approaching the facility, and I'm seeing this unfriendly nurse who is already judgmental and asking me critical questions. And I'm like, okay, I'm never going to come back here. You know, so mm-hmm. those are hindrances to even access. So it's possible that the services are there, but there are some hindrances to accessing them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how are we going to start providing youth-friendly, you know, adolescent and youth-friendly facilities and even services? And beyond that, it's possible that these services are not even there. And that's why I talked about citizens being empowered. You know, and this goes back to civil society organizations and even government themselves. If governments are sure that they are rendering and providing these services, they should also put they should also put things in place to monitor the implementation of what they're making available. So in terms of, okay, have we provided the service, everything is there, so why are people not taking it? There should be questions. And then beyond that, people don't take what they don't even know about. And okay. So you provided the services. Are you making information available for people to know that if you go to so healthcare facility, you will be able to access ABCD? You know, so in terms of information is key and needs to be out there. So governments, beyond what they're doing, because definitely they are still doing, it is easier to say that they are not doing anything at all. But the truth of the matter is there are some services available, but even the ones that are available, are people aware? Are they aware to go? Because of course, for FCT, for example, I know a lot of people will bypass primary healthcare centers.
Exactly.
You understand? They will just, because it's already in the mind that they will not be able to access services. It's just there in the mind that you will not be able to. But definitely, when I took my COVID-19 vaccine, for example, I went to a primary healthcare center to access that, and I was shocked to see that they were actually rent at the facility was okay, everything was, you know, good, and I was shocked because definitely normally it would be like maybe it will be a dilapidated, you know, building or anything like that. So at least there are still some facilities. I can't say 100%, definitely it's not 100%. There are some facilities that are dilapidated. But there are definitely, there are some that are still up and running. So those ones up and running, is the information out there for people to know what they can access there? And then once people know, then they go there. If I know that I'm supposed to add A, B, C, D, and I go there, I'm not able to access it, I don't need to keep quiet as a citizen.
Exactly.
So how are we going to tackle this issue of access? It's for citizens to know their rights. Go and ask for it. You don't have access to it. Escalate it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as clear as that. So we are all in this together.
Yeah, indeed, we're all in this together. But you know, over and above all, you know, that you said, I still want to emphasize on, like knowledge, you know, because people perish because of lack of knowledge. If some of these services are available, just like you said, you know, the primary health center, some of them actually work, but many people bypass it because they feel nothing like that really works in Nigeria. Whose duty is it? Is it the government, the citizen, the civil society? Who exactly should make the services, the availability of such services known so people can have, you know, adequate information to work with in terms of accessing?
Definitely, the government at the primary level. The government, it's their duty because they're the ones rendering the service, right?
Yes.
But definitely civil society organizations, you know, because they are non-governmental, but they are supposed to support the government in achieving the overall goal.
Yes.
And so civil society organizations have more information than an average citizen. And so it's our duty to sensitize. But the government also have, because definitely the government can leverage on different platforms. Like, I don't expect Federal Ministry of Health or any health parastatal to work in isolation. I want to believe that there should be like a interconnectedness between government agencies. For example, there's NOAA there, who can also make use of all the platforms they have to sensitize the populace on different services available, whether it is health, whether it is education. What are those things that governments are doing? NOAA, it's on their desk to make sure that everybody is aware. You know, the citizens are aware of things happening. And then another thing, you know, we are talking about adolescent health and development, and it's like we are, you know, serving on health more. But in terms of development, which cuts across education and all other aspects of empowerment and all of that, NOAA stands the chance to actually reduce the negativity. You know, there's so much negativity in the country in terms of the country not working and all of that. But the truth of the matter is the government is still doing a little. That little, how can it be amplified? So that people will know that, okay, you are even working. Okay, how can I access it? Because people are saying that it's not working because they cannot see it or they don't know about it. And so how are you going to sensitize them to say, okay, this is available. If you go ABC, if you go to this place, you will see it. And then they actually go there and they see it. One way or the other, we'll reduce this negativity. Because part of what our problem is, especially for adolescents, is that adolescents and young people, is that an average young person has lost hope in Nigeria. So how are we going to begin to, you know, change this this narrative by making sure that even the little thing that the government is doing is everywhere, they know about it, and when they go for it, they see it, and it is like that, so that we can begin to bring back the trust. It's all about the trust. We begin to bring back the trust, and then government should also show that they are willing. The political will should be there, the sincerity should be there, you know, and then the information should be out there. It's as clear as that.
Okay, Mr. Rotimi, you've been quiet for quite a while now. Hello, Mr. Rotimi.
Yes, I'm with you.
Do you want to add anything, even as we begin to round off? Well, we barely have 5 minutes to go.
I sort of summarized my key points in the introduction. I just like to reiterate that failure to address adolescent youth and development will lead to outcomes that no country will like. You know, I mean, it is almost inevitable. Again, to restate that education
health, girls, human rights, you can't separate them. They are completely, completely interlinked. So, not just the ministers at the federal level, because it's always important to state that not all problems are federal level problems alone. And this is one of those issues for sure, where not just the ministers, but the commissioners and whoever should be responsible at local government level, that is the councillors that are designated for adolescent and youth health and development, designated for education, designated for health, designated for equality. A lot of people think that women and girls' rights is not a national priority. It is. It is. If you look at the countries at the top of the Global Human Development Index, all those countries that people want to run away to, like Canada, like Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and so forth like that, New Zealand, what is the one thing all of them have in common? There are clear and deliberate policies for girls and women's education and sexual and reproductive health. That is what they all have in common. If you look at the countries at the bottom of the Global Human Development Index, and sadly Nigeria is one of them, along with Niger, Chad, Central African Republic, Mali, Afghanistan, Somalia, Yemen, what is the one thing all of them have in common? Again, it is lack of clear policy and investment in education for women and girls, complete disregard for gender equality and women and girls' rights, almost no emphasis on compulsory education for girls, and so forth like that. So it's important to disaggregate the data so that while we are talking broadly of adolescent youth and adolescent health and development, we also separate out into gender equality, women and girls' rights, education, sexual and reproductive health, and so forth. It is only when we're able to do that, and the National Assembly does its own part, when the executive submits their budget, the Houses of Assembly do their part. When the executive submit the budget, you say, no, excuse me, we can't see clear budget lines for all these issues. And unless this is done, the future is not bright. That understanding has to be there. I mean, we take on board the comments by the caller that said a lot of this information needs to be packaged and presented to the executive and National Assembly. That is why Mrs. Oyeyemi is on the program. That's why we had Dr. Aminu Magashi on the Saturday program and so forth like that. These are civil society colleagues that are working towards these things at different levels. We in the media, especially those of us in media who have development experience, will work with them, support government where necessary, also point out to government where necessary, where the gaps are. I think if we are all able to achieve this, there can be some hope for the adolescents and youth and for the future of the country.
Indeed. Well, that's how it's been for the Public Square special today, where we focus on state of adolescent health and development. And our guest today has been Mr. Rutimi Sankore, who is a development expert and journalist, and also Mrs. Oyeyemi Piton, who is the co-convener of Nigerian Youth Champions on Universal Healthcare. Thank you so much for gracing this program. Thank you for your wonderful insights, Mr. Rutimi and Mrs. Piton.
Thank you.
All right, enjoy the rest of your day. Let me let you go now so that you can go on with other businesses.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, all right, guys. Well, that's how it's been today on the show, the Public Square Special, where we focus on state of adolescent health and development. And I do hope you have been more informed, educated, and you have also been taken to that level where you understand that as a citizen, participation to ensure that this becomes a priority for us. Because just like Mr. Rotimi was saying, countries that give ultimate care and attention and focus to women, youth and children development seem to have more advantages, and you get to see more development in such societies, unlike most countries that ignore that at their own